Welcome to another episode of What Matters in North Carolina. As always, I'm your host, Matt Calder, and on today's show, we'll be talking with Brooke Medina, who you've heard before and becoming more regular on the show now, also at the Civitas Institute, about a recent conference she went to in Washington, D.C., where she participated as a member of a panel talking about education savings accounts for military families. If you know a little about Brooke's background, you'll know that she is the wife of an active duty soldier who is now here in North Carolina and has been involved in homeschooling and you know, alternative schooling methods to the general public school option for the last about a decade. So she's got a lot of experience there to share with us. Now, before we get to that, I want to talk about subscribing to the show, because if you're not subscribed to the show, you're missing out on the easiest way to get the show to your device. We go over this every show, but it's still worth touching on, that if you want to listen to the show, if you're not subscribed, you're probably either going straight to the Freedom Action Network website, or maybe you're going to Facebook or Twitter, and you're following a link through there. But it can get even easier. You can just subscribe to the show if you're an Apple user on Apple Podcasts, if you're an Android user on one of the many apps available for Android users to listen to podcasts. You can just go on there, subscribe, and get it to your device automatically, your phone, your tablet, your computer, wherever you're listening. Also, though, we want to hear from you, and that is where social media does come in handy, on our Facebook and our Twitter. You can hear more from us than just this show, and we can hear from you there, and that is by searching What Matters NC. You can like our Facebook page or follow us on Twitter by searching What Matters NC, and we want to hear from you there. But we also want to literally hear from you, and to do that, all you have to do is call our call-in line at 919-747-8063, and there you'll be able to leave us messages a minute or two, keep it clean and concise, and we will play it on the air. It can be a comment on something we talked about recently. It can be something you want us to talk about. It can be a rant. If you really want to talk about a certain subject and you have some strong opinions on there, call in, leave us that message, and it can be a touching point for a segment we have here. But again, that number is 919-747-8063. And without further ado, we'll get to our segment with Brooke Medina. Brooke, thanks for coming back on the show.
Glad to be here, Matt.
So you just got back from D.C., didn't you?
I did.
So will you tell us what was going on up there?
So Heritage Foundation, which is a nationwide think tank and policy advocacy organization, invited me to come. Their education department is, they are advancing some education policy that is unique to military families, and they are actually doing it with EdChoice, which is based out of Indianapolis, and they are presenting the results of a nationwide policy research gathering event that they had over the summertime, which was geared towards military service members and veterans. And so they were releasing those results and discussing the policy implications of them, and they were also going to have a congressman introduce a bill to Congress very soon regarding this education policy.
All right. And so for people who haven't really heard your background, why did this involve you, or how is this personal to you?
So my husband has been in the military for 18 years now, and we have four children, which has, if you're a military family or know a military family, you recognize that schooling and education for children of military members is unique because of the many moves and deployments and long-term schools that service members have to go to. So I was invited to speak on my experiences as a military spouse.
And how'd it go?
I think it went great. It was very encouraging to me as a military spouse to see that there are people like those at Heritage, Lindsay Burke and Ann Ryland, and EdChoice, Paul DePerna. These are policy researchers that have taken an interest in military families because they recognize that the federal government has a direct role in education for military families. And so they're trying to look at, okay, we're in the 21st century now, and school choice is beginning to become more and more popular. How can we advocate for it for military families, given their unique geographic volatility? And so I think it went well because they were able to articulate why school choice is important to military service members.
Right, and that's also kind of one of the, if you talk about from a political standpoint, one of the groups that everyone wants to help. I mean, it's no one says, I don't want to help veterans. I mean, that's, so if you talk about just from a purely political standpoint, it makes sense to start there. And also, it, you know, it is something that the federal government has a business in a way, in education, or a dog in that fight, which a lot of people, especially people who are, you know, conservatives, governmental conservatives, say, well, why does the government have a role in this anyway? So it's kind of a way that there is a reason for them to be interested there, and you can have a conversation about this, and it's a group everyone wants to help. Right. Nobody wants children and veterans to not get a good education, and if they're facing special difficulties, people are more apt to be open to say, oh, let's figure out how to help that.
Yes. Well, and like you said, as a conservative, we want to bring things as local and as possible. We believe in federalism. This is one area, though, because military service members work for the federal government, there is a mandate there to be involved in this unique area of education. And the reason or the way in which the federal government has historically been involved in education for military families has been through something called Impact Aid. Some people are aware of it, but this study that was released by Heritage and EdChoice discovered that at least half of the service members or their spouses were not familiar with Impact Aid. And essentially what it is the government, the federal government, provides funding to local school districts where military-connected kids attend to offset the loss in tax revenue by those children attending those schools, because service members typically do not pay taxes to the state that they are residing in at that mm-hmm. time. They will pay income taxes to the state that they are residents of, which is not necessarily the same as the state that they're stationed at. So the federal government uses Impact Aid to offset those costs. So the policymakers at Heritage and EdChoice have said, look, this Impact Aid money, instead of it going to a school district where the parent may or may not want their child to attend once they get stationed there, because maybe it's not servicing their particular child's needs as well as another school district nearby, we should actually give the parents this Impact Aid money in the form of an education savings account, or an ESA. And that will provide military families who really don't have a lot of control over like when they move. They don't have, you know, they don't earn a certain amount if they do really, really good at their job. I mean, except through promotions and things like that. So there's not a lot of other ways to control for a military family to operate control in their lives regarding some of these bigger decisions. But if we could empower military families to make at least education choices for their children by offering them ESAs, and then we would be able to advance school choice, and we would be able to save the government money, because not only
which saves us money, I mean, it saves right. taxpayers
it
money.
It saves taxpayers yeah. money, which is excellent and grand, and I'm always advocating for that as a taxpayer myself, but. Also, DOD schools, which are Department of Defense schools, which is another aspect of government, federal government-run education that needs to be addressed in these policies, is exponentially more expensive than sending a child to a private school or a public school off base. So that's another way in which the government is spending a lot of taxpayer money. The average cost to send a military-connected child to a DOD school, which those ones are exclusively on base, or if somebody's stationed in Germany, for example, they've got DOD schools there for American kids, it costs about $26,000 a year compared to Wake County, where we live, about $8,800 a year to send a child to school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's a huge difference. So this is just a fiscally responsible way to approach education in the 21st century for military-connected kids. And it is empowering parents, because a third of the service members that were surveyed in this study said that the education options for their children had a significant impact on whether or not they decided to stay in the service. So this could be perceived as, in some ways, a secondary issue for national security things. So, if there's a service member that the government has already poured a lot of money into training, either through basic training, AIT, different things like that, and yet that service member doesn't want to stay in past 4 years because their child doesn't have good education choices, the government just lost a lot of money because that person decided not to reenlist. And so they're all interconnected, and so it is just in the government's best interest, in taxpayers' best interest, and in military families' best interest that we provide the families with ESAs.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It sounds like it. And, just looking at one recently, I know one area that they're just bleeding guys is pilots, the aviation programs. They can't seem to keep these guys in. And one of the reasons is definitely going to be family life. I mean, a lot of people, when you talk to them about, well, why'd you get out? You got out at 8 years. You got out at 12 years, 14, 8, 16 years, right in the home stretch. And you go, well, why'd you get out? I go, well, it was what was best for my family.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that doesn't always mean education. That doesn't always mean that it could be a sorts of things, being away from home too far, too long, that sort of thing. But really, education is one of the top things. I mean, when I, went to go buy a house, the school district was a very important thing. And that can become less important if you talk about ESA standpoint, but it is something that's on your mind when you make any kind of decision as a parent, is your children, whether it's seemingly related to your children directly or not. But so kind of a little more about your background. What, as far as your children and education, what, I guess, portions of the education system have they seen? Public school, private school, homeschool? What have your children been exposed to?
So for our children, because my husband has moved around and therefore we have moved around so much, we have chosen to homeschool our children. So they are in their ninth year of homeschooling. My parents have come alongside of me because my dad, who served for 29 years, recently retired. And so they have actually agreed to homeschool my children with me. And we have decided that is the best route for us because it provides continuity for our children's education, especially given the frequent moves that we've experienced. And also, just on that note of homeschooling, the military population, there are twice as many homeschoolers in the military population compared to the civilian population. So about 7% of military families homeschool, and at least 22% have actually tried homeschooling, and that number is actually higher among minorities in the military community. It just goes to show that military families are looking and aching for different options, especially given their unique lifestyle. And homeschooling has been one of those that has been extremely beneficial, but of course it does come with its cost, right? So whether that requires that one spouse stay at home rather than working or finishing school, or if you're dual military, you just don't even have that option. And there is an increasing number of dual military families as well. And
that seems like a harder way to be about things going on, especially, I know there are cross branch military spouses, one's in Air Force, one's Marines, and it's, I don't see how that can work. It has to be so difficult. Which, granted, that's a little off topic, but
no, but it is difficult. I know a few of them, and yes, right.
It just seems so hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it'd be hard enough. You have two people in the Navy or two people in the Army, and balancing that with one, but it's with two different branches, completely different branches of service. I mean, it seems like a pretty big mountain.
Yes, you have to reconcile yourself with not seeing one another very often is what I've have observed from the outside, just with some friends that have experienced that. But so for my own children, we do homeschool, and that has proven to provide the continuity that I was looking for my children, because when your spouse, for example, my husband deployed in December several years back, and he deployed out of Washington State, but we were stationed in North Carolina at the time, and so he went over to Washington, was going to spend 6 weeks over there before he left for Afghanistan. Well, because we homeschooled, we had the opportunity to go with him to Washington State. We lived in a hotel for 6 weeks, and we got to spend that extra time with him before he actually took off to Afghanistan. If my children were in the regular school system, I would have, we maybe could have, you know, taken them out of the schools and then just homeschooled them for that temporary time, but it would have just caused so much transition, not to mention saying goodbye to their father for a year, that it was just so much more helpful to homeschool during that time. I have other friends that are stationed in Germany, and they get to homeschool their children, even though it is illegal to do that in Germany because they fall under the U.S. military and the U.S. federal government. They're able to homeschool there. So there are plenty of choices that military families access, but most of them have to go with the public school system, even if they don't necessarily want to, because of the financial limitations, especially younger enlisted servicemen and women who have children but are unable to afford private school options, and they need to live close to the base, but the base sometimes doesn't have the best school system available. And so they're in a catch-22. What do they do? Do they pull out, do they work a second job? Well, some of them have said yes, they do. They do work second jobs. That's another result of the study, is military families are much more likely to either take out a loan or work another job in order to afford their children's education.
So. Oh, wow. And it sounds like homeschooling has offered your family both the stability and flexibility that you needed as a family. But again, that opportunity is not there for everyone. And an ESA program could help with that, honestly. I mean, with the expense of that, it could help.
Absolutely.
So you said you've been homeschooling for 9 years. So have your kids ever been in public school?
No, my children have not. I attended DOD schools when I was a kid. My dad was stationed in Germany, so I attended there. And we just decided, my husband went to public schools in New York and in Florida, and I was homeschooled for part of my time, and having that experience, we decided homeschooling was the best way for us to educate our children. We didn't really want to focus so much on testing and just teaching for a test, and so we decided homeschooling was going to be the way in which we could avoid having to do that and really focus on helping our children learn certain values and character traits that were very important to us. Not that they can't learn that anywhere else, but that was something we really wanted to be intentional about. So we did make the decision to homeschool. They did attend private school for 1 year, but that was definitely a very huge financial burden, and we were unable to do it after our second child. So we kept homeschooling.
Yeah, and I'm a product of the public school system from beginning to end. Well, I guess not pre-K, the preschool. I apparently went on day one, and I just told my mom, I said, I don't want to be here. And she's like, okay, and took me home and then taught me there. But thinking back on it, I don't think I learned that much in the public school system that really was impactful in your daily life and that sort of thing. I mean, a lot of the math stuff, being in a communications driven field, doesn't come into play. The math that I do use, financial math, wasn't very focused on. I mean, I didn't really need to learn how to amortization of a loan is something you don't really need to know how to do. You just need to understand how interest compounds over time as a basic concept. But the fact is, you know, you don't learn that much life knowledge in public school the way it was oriented in North Carolina. I mean, I was in the Johnston County school system from kindergarten on through to my entire, you know, education through 12th grade. But that's not where the daily knowledge I use that came from. And I wonder if we can do a better job of that.
Right.
And more just life experience, reading. I mean, we diluted down from when even my brother, 3 years ahead of me, went through school to when I came through, the books we read. We read, you know, I think I read probably half a dozen books that I had to read for school in high school. It was like a couple my freshman year, and then just tailored off. And I'm going a half dozen books.
Wow.
Out of all the books that are out there. I mean, and you talk about the way you read in middle school was this, I mean, it you didn't discuss what you read. You just read it or read it aloud in class at this just crushingly slow pace of people reading out loud and getting in trouble for reading ahead. I mean,
that's amazing to me, because what good is reading a book if you can't wrestle with the contents of it? And, you know, for all of the ways in which we say we want our children to embrace diversity and, you know, have this expanded worldview, well, if we can't even let them wrestle with the book because the teachers have to teach to this test and they don't have time work with them on these other aspects of education, you know, we're doing a disservice to our children. And unfortunately, I know so many good teachers here in North Carolina and throughout the U.S. A lot of them are military spouses, actually. And it's effectively tying their hands, too, because they want to be able to share the passion that they have for the subject that they teach. But they have to focus on test scores. And, you know, this is the way that they will always be measured. Which is unfortunate in a whole different conversation in and of itself. But you just make a really good point that's very sobering and sad, which is talking about, okay, you only read maybe 6 books throughout the 4 years of high school.
For school. I myself read a lot.
Right, but yeah, for high school yeah. that were assigned. And that's absolutely shameful. You know, that the school curriculum would not require more than that. But that also shows our growing, you know, derision maybe for a traditional liberal arts education.
We don't teach people to think anymore. We really don't. We teach them to take a test. I mean, even so, we read this book, and what sticks with me is the first freshman year, you have 2 English classes. I think it was the first one. It's like an intro class or something or other. But you read the book a separate piece. Have you ever read this one? It's basically about these prep school kids, and they're on the diving team, and there's one who's the second place kid who's jealous of the one who's a little better and ends up actually injuring that kid.
A Nancy Kerrigan, Tanya Harding. Sort of thing. Do you remember
something
that?
Like
were you
that.
Old enough
yeah,
for that?
Yeah, I remember that. But something like that. More of a not very known that he did it kind of thing.
Okay.
It was a.
But we all knew Tanya Harding did it.
Exactly.
Or hired someone.
The book. It's like you read and it's like 10 questions and they're just factual questions. Did this person did this, 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 and the other go, well, the whole point of this book is this guy is about him kind of trying to find himself or you know, go through this and wrestle with all these complex ideas of this jealousy and this, did he mean to hurt this guy or not? And making him fall off this tree and break his leg. And then the guy ends up dying because he re-breaks his leg and gets a bone shard into his veins and goes into his heart and kills him. But like all this, I mean, I'm spoiler alert here for, you know, after the fact for everyone.
Don't bother reading the book anymore. Matt just told you.
Yes.
That.
Well, there's still used to reading the book, but you didn't, that didn't come through. It was an assignment.
That's because we have a value-free, there was a push to have this valueless, value-free education environment, which is absolutely absurd anyways, because we're always transmitting values whether we are honest about it or not. And for them to ignore, you know, the very, very important teachable life lessons in that book is disappointing.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I think about the ones that we didn't read. It's like 1984. How do we not read 1984, especially in today's society? I mean, but we didn't read The Great Gatsby. We read Lord of the Flies. We read To Kill a Mockingbird, but we didn't discuss it. Like, mm-hmm. We didn't talk about it.
And there's something to be said about not only reading a book, but learning how to mine the treasures and the information from it so that you can apply it to your life. You know, what good is just gathering knowledge if it is never put to use? That's something that And it's not just homeschool families that get to do this. So I don't want it to seem as if I'm only promoting homeschooling. But my daughter, she's in ninth grade. And so she just finished The Scarlet Letter. She read Billy Budd before that. What was she reading at the beginning? Johnny Tremaine. They're focusing on American history.
Johnny She's Tremaine. Been, I remember that one. Yeah. With the silver hand. Yeah. Yes. I remember that one.
I had read it to my kids prior to her reading it on her own. And then we watched the video by Disney after that. Unfortunately, Disney cut out some very important parts of the book.
Yeah, we watched a live action movie on that one after the book.
Yeah. And it's always fun for kids, I think, to be able to watch a movie after they've read the book. Mm-hmm. But the important aspect of one of the most important aspects of reading good books is to find out ways in which you can apply those lessons to your own life. Even if you're looking at the villain in a book and seeing, okay, these are the character traits this villain possessed and exhibited, and so therefore I should avoid these sort of behaviors in my own life or this sort of mentality, because we get to get into the villain's mind even when we're reading these books, and we can see where that seed of...
But they don't want that anymore. They don't want you to read about
that. Which is
that.
Insane. Because if we want... Even if, you know, the purpose of education in America to some extent is to raise good citizens, it would behoove us then to teach some solid values that promote good citizenship. But if we're not wrestling with texts, you know, how are we going to do that?
I agree. If you don't see the dark, you can't appreciate the light. If you don't see what the negative it is, how can you really be the positive? But anyway, thank you for coming on and talking with us about education and books and movies.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you to Brooke for coming on again and talking with us about her viewpoints on education and her personal family relationship to education and deciding how best to educate her four children. And that was definitely, I think, a nice window into a different situation than a lot of us are in, than most of us are in. The vast, vast majority of people will not have to worry about those types of things about the moving, the constant moving, and trying for her to build some sort of stability into her family's education in a way that actually gives them a lot of flexibility. So that was a definitely a good window for us to get into that sort of thing. But thank you to you, the listeners, as well, for tuning in for another episode of What Matters in North Carolina. Make sure you're subscribing to the show. If you're not subscribing, you're missing out on the easiest way to get the show to your device. And again, to do that, all you have to do is go to, if you're an Apple user, then you can just go with the Apple Podcasts as their app that they use. You can do it on your iPhone, your iPad, your iTouch, your Mac, your computer, your laptop. And just go search What Matters in North Carolina Apple Podcasts. If you're an Android user, all you need to do is go to any of the many Android apps they have available out there. I myself am an Android user. I use Apple Podcast Addict, and it served me very well. It's a free app. And just search for What Matters in North Carolina there and subscribe to the show. You get it on your device. You don't have to worry about going to the website. You don't have to worry about tracking it down or following it through a link on social media. You just go and get it directly to your device. No effort from you. It's just right there. And also follow along with us on social media. Just because you're subscribed to the show doesn't mean we want you to stop going to our Facebook and our Twitter and go like the Facebook page, follow us on Twitter. There you'll hear from us things that you hear outside of the show, but also we can hear from you on there. And to do that, just go search What Matters NC on Facebook and Twitter. It's the same thing, What Matters NC, and you'll find us there. But also we want to hear from you on that, but literally we want to hear from you as well on the show, by calling our call-in line at 919-747-8063. Again, that's 919-747-8063. All you have to do there is just call, leave a message, 1 to 2 minutes, keep it clean, keep it concise, and if it's good, we'll definitely play it on the air, because we want to hear from you. We want to talk to you and hear from you about what you want to hear from us. And we'll talk to you next time.